I'm not hearing anything. Can you guys hear me?
We can hear you, Hart. How are you doing?
Not bad.
Can you guys hear me? This is Greg.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Yay. Hey, technology that works. It's awesome.
I didn't know there was a hold song. Somebody put it in the chat.
I wasn't hearing anything.
We use Zoom a lot. I've never heard a hold song on Zoom, so that's weird.
Huh. I wonder if Ron can hear us.
No response. I'm not seeing an audio indicator on his.
Yeah. Let me.
His mic probably got messed up.
Well, I think if you don't see the microphone there in the participant list, that means they don't have any audio even connected, I believe. So neither computer nor dial-in.
Yeah, my guess is this computer.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Oh, hey, Rob.
There you go. It's kind of interesting. I dialed separately from my iPhone using the fast dial feature, and I was just all there by myself. I don't know whether they hooked me up on a separate bridge or what, but I was hearing the whole music. So I had to hang up and dial back in.
So. I say let's blame Apple.
Strange.
How we doing on? Looks like we're doing pretty good. Was Mick going to join? Do you know, Ron?
I did not get a cancellation from him, so I assume he is. Oh no, he did decline.
Okay. All right.
Let's see here. No, he accepted. Sorry.
All right.
He did accept.
Okay. I've made what I think is some progress on the smart contract paper. Thanks to you, Ram, and to Mark at IBM, and Tracy, and of course all the work that, you know, all of you have put into it. But there's still a couple of comments that I was hoping to get folks to weigh in on and see if they are things that can be resolved or.
Sounds good. Let's see. Where did the Zoom conference thing go? Okay, so
I think
you have Greg.
You want me to go ahead and share my screen, or should I just drop the link in the chat? I mean, either one's fine with me.
Yeah, I think we're using the Rocket Chat as well, so maybe you can drop a link on both.
All right. And I'll admit, I have not yet gotten really in the habit of using Rocket Chat. So it'll probably take me a little bit of fumbling around to figure out where to put it. But if
no worries, I'll just put the Rocket Chat thing right on Zoom. So
okay.
That makes it.
There we go. Come
While you're doing that, I have a question. How does one make comments or try to get stuff changed in like the consensus white paper?
Great. Well, I think you've come to the right place. we haven't done it yet, so there's no process in place. But you know, this would be the place to do that, and I think. I guess it depends kind of on the nature of the comments. You know, if they're extensive, then we may want to dig back up the sort of final Google Doc that the PDF that's currently published is based on. If they're, you know, less extensive and more like, well, we wanted to insert this paragraph here type of thing, then I think you could just send it to me via email, and assuming there's no objections from the group here, we can just go ahead and fold it in.
All right, I'll try sending you some email first and see if you think it's extensive or not.
Fair enough.
And feel free to CC the architecture work group list so you know others can weigh in as well.
Yeah, it has to do with just some stuff that's been going on in the performance working group. So around consensus, I'm kind of surprised the Sawtooth guys haven't jumped on some of this stuff. So.
So you want to talk briefly about it? So,
yeah, well, it has to do with what is the consensus around. So the paper says basically that it's around ordering, which is a very fabric centric view, right? As opposed to the order doesn't matter as long as the end state is what you agree upon. Right.
Now, I think we actually say it's both order and correctness of the transactions, right? That's what we say in the paper.
But that's not really the case in something. Well, at least as I understand Sawtooth, and certainly around other blockchains, it doesn't matter the order as long as I get to the same end state, right? And so transactions can be ordered in many different ways and still end up with the same state because the transactions aren't related to one another.
We can see if Mick joins and he can clarify, but my understanding of Sawtooth is that the order is picked by the leader and the leader is chosen randomly using POET, for instance, but at the end of the day the whoever wins that election is going to specify the order, and that's what you're going to end up with.
The ordering is still important, right? In Sawtooth and everything, order still matters, but in some cases, you can relax ordering constraints. Certainly among transactions that are dependent on each other, you know, order matters. So Sawtooth just allows you to relax these constraints a little bit, but you still need to agree on kind of a relative order. Instead of an absolute order, it has to be some kind of, you know, topological graph order. Pretty much every consensus algorithm out there is inherently, you know, order focused.
The way the paper reads, though, at least I'll have to go back and look at it again, and certainly what was being proposed in the or described in the performance working group stuff was that, you know, there's an absolute order, and I'm not sure that I would agree with that.
Well, but that's the order of how transactions are recorded. So Sawtooth takes then the dependency graph that is in those order transactions to potentially parallelize the execution, but the actual ledger provides the absolute order.
At the end of the day, when you're committing a block, there is strict agreement on the order. Hey, Mick.
Sorry, I've been having audio issues all morning, so I'm not sure what's going on.
You know, strangely
you
enough,
just,
that's
I know, you were just censoring me, you know. I'm sure of it.
I myself ended up in a separate silo listening to the whole song for a while while everybody else was in the right conference. So.
All right. So
I don't necessarily want to waylay this meeting. I just brought this up because I thought while we were waiting for the smart contract paper to come up. But go ahead, Mick.
So Sawtooth does have a notion of total ordering like everybody else. It does have the ability to revert a block, so you have a commit is not necessarily final, but at any point in time, a given validator can assert the ordering of a particular set of transactions.
Okay.
In short, order matters.
Well, yeah, I don't think anybody
That was not what I said. What I said was that every sort of blockchain total ordering.
Yeah, but what I suggest for this sort of comments on papers that are already finished is that the Google Doc be opened up for comments, and people who have suggestions, comments, make them there, and then we can get into a debate or whatever it is about what is meant, rather than revisiting this.
I think that makes sense. I think we need that for all the papers, right? These aren't static documents, I hope.
Absolutely. We're all on the same page. They're all living documents, and we're going to, as things change, we can go back and update them.
But of course, that doesn't mean that suggestions will be accepted. Well, depends on what they are. Right? I mean, anybody can say anything, right? We are going to agree on what suggestions are going to be accepted, because order. Yeah. For example, this particular thing where order you said does not matter as long as the final state is agreed upon. I mean, that's one way of saying it, but in the end, order matters if the transactions are dependent on each other. I mean.
Why don't I propose that we, Todd, if you can send an email, make the edits in the Google Doc, and then perhaps send an email with your suggestions, then we can table this as an item for discussion in a future meeting.
Yep.
Because of the issues with permissions in Google Docs, would it make sense to maybe have a Jira ticket or some other issues forum for providing feedback on these documents? That way we don't have defacement problems on the actual Google Docs, but we have a way of responding to the issues.
That's a good idea. Who is that? Sorry, Nathan, was that you?
Yeah, this is Nathan.
Yes, thanks. Yeah, that's a good idea. But I guess next. Yeah, welcome back. We have a good.
Have we had defacement problems?
We have not had defacement problems yet, but I guess we could.
But you can always lock it for edits and just allow comments.
That's true.
I mean, there are various ways to deal with this, but obviously if you open it for edits, then, you can just go and delete the document. I mean, of course,
there's a version history, yeah.
Yeah, there's a version history, but, it's just a mess. Like Wikipedia or something where somebody starts having a Wikipedia war. I'm hopeful that we won't have that same kind of problem. But, thing to do is to open it for comments, or like Nathan suggests, have it in a separate tracking thing like Jira.
I like your suggestion of saying lock it for edits, but open it for comments and have comments put in, and then we can discuss and open it for edits when we've reached some kind of consensus about it.
Ha ha
ha. I like actually the idea of Nathan a lot to set up some kind of Jira infrastructure around this, and I think we could probably do it for all the documentation of all of the groups that output documentation. So if we had some kind of directory where, output papers go. So like the architecture papers would go there, the identity papers would go there, the white paper could go there. And then we could have a Jira infrastructure around that. Would that make sense to people?
But that's only if the document has been released, right? 1.0 has been, if it's still in draft, do you need to do that?
No, I don't think so. If you look at the Rust RFC repository on GitHub, it's a good example of this, where they have a folder full of MD files that are kind of final draft documents. And they expect that if someone's drafting something new, that they would collaborate in something like a working group, like say the identity working group would be building the identity paper. And then once they get to a point where they want to release a version of it, they can move it over into an MD file inside of the GitHub repository where you have hosting for it. And then, at least in the Rust case, they're using the GitHub issue that is referenced at the top of the document to track changes in conversation. In our case, maybe Jira would make more sense there. I know India is looking at doing kind of an RFC GitHub repository to try to get some more of the architecture of documentation out where it's trackable.
That sounds like
a so are you suggesting that we move documentation from Google Docs to GitHub MD files?
Well, at least in the case of Indy, for our development documentation, we've had trouble with people being able to find and track, especially multiple versions of documents inside of Google Docs. So having an authoritative version that's in a repository gets us the code sign-off requirements that we need, and it also means that there can be a canonical versioning of those documents and, you know, kind of you have a centralized editor ability with the maintainer structure of GitHub. For some of these other documents, I'm not sure how much sense that would make. Maybe this is a good topic we could discuss some more at the Hackfest in LA, because I can show a little bit about what Indy's thinking of doing for their RFC repository, and we can see what overlap there is.
I think that's a good idea, because in Google Docs, there's a putative owner, but in a thing like a GitHub, there would be a, version history that is kind of separate from the owner, separate from all of that.
By the way, folks, I forgot to remind everyone that, we have the antitrust policy notice pasted on the notes page, just a reminder. We're supposed to do the boilerplate stuff at the beginning of every work group meeting. Consider that box checked. There's Mick posted the link to the notes page, so please go and add yourself to that list, and if you can help capture notes, that would be great too. So I would suggest we probably, in the case of, I like the idea of putting it in some repo and tracking changes there, but perhaps we can, when we get to a 1.0, where we're getting to a release version of the document, then we can move to that. Of course, if others have other suggestions, I'm open to seeing whether we go to an MD file or something. But I think the Google Docs method is working fine.
Yeah, I mean, this only makes sense for kind of final drafts, because we want we want final drafts to be easily accessible to people, and we want the burden for changing final drafts to be sort of non-trivial, right?
Yes.
So I think this only makes sense once we kind of, get some big approval for a document and people at that point at least think it's done.
I think it will also help with discoverability, because right now, unless you have the link to the original Google Doc, it's kind of lost in space. Whereas if
we do have the links in the wiki page for the ARC work group.
Oh, to the actual paper Google Doc?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
To the published one. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. And in the identity working group, we have links in the wiki page to everything, to the meeting notes and the paper document, which is a docs file.
Yeah, the wiki page has quite a few links. And as Hart says, that's the place that I'm starting to go to all the time for the information. So.
I guess I should too.
Greg, do you want to kind of walk through what the remaining things on the smart contract paper, just and close it out if
get input? Yeah, I'd be happy to. So basically, I've removed all the header content that was, put there to kind of highlight the large open questions And, you know, tried to begin the process of cleaning it up. One of the other things that I did was, and I'd be interested in everyone's thoughts on this, is rearrange the introduction section a little bit. When I went back and I looked at the consensus paper, and then I read the sort of got into and started to read the beginning of the smart contracts paper, I felt like this section here, introduction, was important to repeat in the smart contract paper, because I think will certainly be the case that a lot of people are going to read the smart contract paper, either not having read the consensus paper or not having read it in a while. And similarly, I thought that the Hyperledger architecture overview would be useful to include as well. And what I thought we could do is, right, in each paper, and you know, we'll have the designer clean this up when we get there, is include the link. So we're just kind of going through, right, knocking each one of these components down. So we've done consensus and we've got the link to the final here. You know, you're right now in the process of reading the smart contract paper. When we get to the communication one, we'll have the link to the smart contract one and so forth. Any thoughts on that before I move more into the real meat? And then I moved to the back, the sort of boilerplate information, so about Hyperledger and about the working group, the architecture working group, so that we didn't end up with, you know, 2.5 pages of sort of preface before getting into the meat. But I felt like it was important to repeat the sort of introduction and the Hyperledger architecture overview for folks who might be coming into this fresh.
I think that makes sense to let the second paper stand on its own legs so that it's not all linked to the other one. So at some point in time, we might make a larger document which has everything, in which case then we might need to edit out the redundant information.
Sure. Yep. Okay, cool. So assuming there aren't any contrary points of view on that, then we can move into it. So, you know, again, this was really just cleanup from my standpoint, you know, going through looking at comments that had been sort of sitting for a couple months and cleaning this up a little bit. So not a lot until we get down to the transaction dependencies. And Mick, you had made a comment in December regarding this concept of batching. And I didn't see a clear action associated with that. And so I wanted to see if this was something that you felt was addressed or if you felt like it still needed something.
I think it was a comment about a much, much earlier version. And I'm not sure. I went back and took a look at it and I have no context for what I said. So
okay.
Resolving it was appropriate.
Excellent. Then, you know, Tracy, I don't believe is on the call. I think she's, I know she's in San Francisco and I think she's on her way to a meeting or in a meeting right now. So I can loop back with her unless there's anybody on the call who feels they can clarify the question that she's posing regarding implicit and explicit.
Yeah, this was, I guess, part of the longer conversation. And mm-hmm. I mean, the answer is that yes, it depends on the implementation. Just I wasn't clear on how to put that in without referring to the comment that was just resolved by Mick, where it allows for this specific variation. Because I guess we're going to go into more detail for each mm-hmm. of the implementations further down. So I didn't want to mention the sawtooth kind of a different yep. solution.
I see.
That kind of, so sawtooth allows you for both.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone else does.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Okay. And it does seem like we go into this concept of implicit and explicit in the following paragraphs, and then it sounds like we've explained that, you know, at some length in the sawtooth section. So are folks okay with you resolving this comment that Tracy has placed in here, or would it be something that I should loop back with her on? Do folks feel?
What is the resolution? Is the resolution just to leave the text as it is? Is that the proposal?
Correct.
Yes.
Yeah, then I'm fine.
Okay. All right. Okay. I can always revive that if needed. I can circle back with Tracy on this comment here. And I think we're good here. And I think we've actually covered that as well. So I'm going to delete that. So I tried what we discussed, Ram, about, you know, looking into the description of each of the frameworks and seeing if there was a clear path for me to genericize these various interfaces. And I have to say, I didn't feel like I was, well, I nothing jumped out at me as something that I felt I could write with confidence. And Tracy, you know, dropped this comment in, well, a while ago. And I think when she and I went through it last week, felt like we were still sort of at the same place. And then as I looked at this some more this morning, I wondered if the image on page 3 might be something that we could either move or replicate and possibly provide maybe a little more detail around. But if this image doesn't accomplish what it is that, at least to my, you know, admittedly non-expert perspective, is kind of what I understand anyway to be what we're trying to get at in this section around the interactions with the other layers. So I don't know. Let me stop there and see what folks think.
Yeah. So just to provide a little bit more information, the thing we were discussing is, you know, it seems like the other sections are kind of fleshed out enough, but we haven't fleshed out the interface description. It's still a high level bulletized section.
Right. Looking at the top of page 6. Mm-hmm.
So I want to, I guess, you know, get what can we put in there as the abstract interface of the smart contract with other layers, and mainly, I guess, the consensus layer. But if there's others, then we should call that out.
Where I struggled was, you know, there's definitely text describing how the different frameworks do this. What I was struggling to do, and I think it's probably very much related to my you know, relative lack of expertise in the area, is genericize from those, because they just seemed so different to me. And maybe to somebody with a keener eye on this might be able to discern the commonalities, but it wasn't clear to me.
Mick, what do you think? Is what the bullets that we have here, are they representative, and do we just need to kind of provide a little bit more detail on these?
So, rather than trying to come back to a, you know, some commonality with specific interfaces, but what is there sort of, well, I guess in looking at this, I was trying to figure out, is there a sense of abstraction that we can apply here that that would actually provide meaningful information? And that's what I'm having a hard time figuring out. You know, there needs to be a representation for what the transaction is so that we know all the information, a representation for dependencies, and a representation for state. Okay, that's pretty much common to everyone.
Yeah.
And if the task is simply converting bullets into paragraphs or sentences, that's certainly something I'm feeling like I could do. I just was, where I was falling down was on trying to genericize, you know, the ways that it was actually done, the ways that these different frameworks interfaced. And I was struggling with that a little bit. But if it's simply, you know, kind of describing that these are the touch points and that, you know, these interfaces are approached differently in the different frameworks, you know, but right, there's, yeah, you know.
So Mick, this is Vivian. Just trying to clarify here. So you have the transaction, and then you have the other two, which are the transaction dependencies and the state. Are you saying that we need an interface to discover, given a transaction, the transaction dependencies, and following that, the state? Because the information in the transaction should be enough to discover these by the smart contract layer, or is it something that I'm not seeing here at all?
So I'm trying to swap back in, you know, some of the discussion about why this section is here. And I think what the intent behind the section was to situate smart contracts into the rest of the architectural framework, right? So if you want to think, this is a bad way of thinking about it, but it helps me. But, you know, what's the read-write step for the component that's the smart contract as it's viewed from the other pieces of the ledger? You know, so the contract needs to know about the transaction, the transaction dependencies. The contract needs to know about its own state, but it also needs to know about the state of the ledger. What it's providing to the rest of the ledger is a correctness test. It's also providing some piece of data that the rest of the ledger needs to be responsible to ensure gets synchronized across all the other nodes or participants in it. So, and I think the notion on the transaction and transaction dependencies on the output side of things is really kind of there may be a rewrite that takes place on that. But anyway, so that was kind of, I mean, I was looking at this section as sort of, how does the smart contract layer get situated and interact with the rest of the pieces of the ledger? That was, that was sort of my conception. So,
and to take it one level more, I guess this is the beginning of any, you know, if you want to go to a common module, then this is the abstract definition of the interface between that module and, you know, the consensus module, and to be more specific here, right? And
right. At least the data elements that we would use to construct that interface.
Yeah, at least the information elements, exactly.
Just to condense, so you're saying, I mean, this is what I hear anyway. Is the transaction a proposal to change the state valid or not?
Okay. Sorry, Vipin, are you
asking? It's a proposal. The transaction is a proposal to change the state of the ledger. Is that proposal correct or not?
Yeah, that's the accept reject coming from the smart contract layer to the consensus, right? That's the informational. So you think about what's going to the smart contract layer, and that is the request itself. And you put in transaction dependencies, which is, you know, in the case that you have explicit dependencies between transactions to call them out. I think that's a feature that, for instance, Sawtooth has, and any description of the state of the ledger on which the transaction is going, the smart contract layer is going to be operating on, right? And then what you're getting back from the smart contract is first whether it's an accept or reject, if it's a right. And the second one is, you know, updates to the state and what is the state delta, and any annotation to the transactions, and you know, specifically calling out the dependencies associated with it.
But also, for
and, you know, if you updated the dependencies
for some of the implementations, I guess it's you first propose, and then you participate in the as part of the consensus. That would be like the validation part. But then there's at the end of the consensus, you commit. Is that a separate interface or the same interface? Because it's semantically different.
Yeah, so I assume that the commit is happening at the consensus layer. But we should see whether that's, this is just, you know, the smart contract layer, and this is on a transaction by transaction basis. If we are able to separate that out, that's the way my mental model is for this. But, you know, we should make sure that everybody has the same mental model.
I guess that's the question of where the state is, which is, again, kind of implementation specific. Where is the queryable state? Because you should only commit to that state once you reach the consensus. So it's
correct.
Kind of becomes the loop. So, and you can only, but first, before you even get to the commit, you have to validate. So I think at some point Ben was saying that they call that like simulate. But anyway, it's a validity, as Vipin was saying. First you propose, then you get your valid, accept reject as here. And then you either apply it to the state right away, or you wait for the consensus to give you the final decision. So what I'm saying is this is kind of feels like an implementation specific flow. So I don't know, I'm kind of almost looking to Mick for the comments on this.
Well, what do you mean by implementation specific?
So depending on which how the consensus works, right? If you accept a transaction in an implicit consensus, like Nakamoto consensus, you just kind of, if it's valid, you apply it.
Correct.
If you wait for the voting for everybody to confirm its validity, then it's a two-phase.
Well, all that says is the accept reject is more complex than just a single process executing it. I mean, the endorser policy in Fabric, for example, I would put into the role of kind of the accept reject portion of it. And again, I think and Stan, this is sort of where I was trying to go back to originally. It was, how do we describe the sort of operations without getting into the level of having to fix implementation details? There clearly is some role for the smart contract to notify the rest of the system that this is a good transaction or not a good transaction.
That I agree.
And you know, I think at that level, we're good. Whether it's done concurrently with application, or whether there's a separate process through which validation occurs and ordering occurs. And I mean, even in Fabric is even more complex than that, right? Because the endorsers can vote on everything, then turn around and have to reject the transaction they all said was yes, because there was a double spend. So it's not even that straightforward. I was just saying that trying to find the right level to express these concepts is the challenge of this section.
And
it's not the concepts, it's the level at which we present them.
Correct. So the intent of the accept reject, I think, is, you know, everybody's clear, right? That you want to have the smart contract layer responsible to say whether there's a valid transaction or not. The intent of the read write of state is to say, you know, what version, if you will, or did you operate on. The intent of the state delta is to kind of express what needs to change when this gets committed, whether it's committed right away or committed after, multiple steps, right? And the transaction details are going to be, you know, if you kind of, maybe we need to specify, so the what did we mean by the transaction dependencies? Yeah, so I guess the transaction information could have been updated. Remind me what we were putting there separately from the dependencies. I understand what we had with the dependencies was if you had some implicit dependencies that you discovered, you might annotate that. Did we have a reason why? I guess it's you
are modifying the transaction.
Yeah.
For modifying the transaction, I think, I don't remember. I know that when I looked at this, my thought was, again, that there's some kind of a proof that gets the contract layer does create some kind of a proof that it attaches to the transaction.
Sure. But, yeah.
I mean, that's a stretch. And I'm trying to swap context back in for this one, and it's not working particularly well.
And the other piece that we have not included here is the events and quote unquote side effects, right?
Yes.
Side effects.
For instance, if if this transaction gets committed, if you wanted to send some event notifications to an external system, you might want to specify that here. And once all the rest of the consensus process happens and it gets committed, you might need to fire those event notifications.
Yeah, but I get that instead of loading up all that stuff in here, that is like an observer layer that's outside this system. And the second thing is that observer layer, in fact, this thing came up quite a lot in the performance working group, which was when is the transaction actually committed? It has to be if something has to measure it, then it has to know the transaction was committed with X number, it was actually committed according to the rules of consensus, and it actually entered the data store. So there is an observer that has to be placed there in order to get that information and relay it back. And now, we got into the difference between eventual consistency and durable. I mean, the other side, which is consistency that is sure, and probabilistic consistency. And then there were some measures proposed about which percentage of what is the kind of, like in the Bitcoin case, there would be like six transactions or something based on observed.
All that is related to consensus, right? So
to consensus, but it's also like right now you're proposing that you have event notification, which is part of smart contracts, right?
No. So all I'm saying is that this is what the smart contract needs to tell the consensus layer. So we are only talking about the interface between the smart contract layer and the consensus layer, right? So all we're saying is that this is the layer that's
dealing with the actual business logic. And the consensus layer is the layer that's going to decide when something gets actually committed, right? That's the separation of concerns, right? So then the reason why I was mentioning the side effect is that what the side effect is determined here. When it gets applied depends on when consensus decides to commit.
Side effect. Events. I don't get the connection. Maybe I'm completely thinking about it in a completely different way. Anyway, go ahead.
Well, so maybe I'll talk about it in the way I think about it. My mental model is that that the actual transaction. So if I think of it as a finite state machine, the request is coming in, the actual request processing is happening on the smart contract, but it's not going to be committed till it goes through consensus. And part of what happens with the finite state machine changes is the state delta that it does, but also might be output actions like, you know, event notifications and so forth. And, you know, those are going to take place only when that state delta and that request process is actually committed, which means that it needs to go through consensus and make sure that there is no conflicting transaction and so forth, right? So all then, that is...
Sorry. Then
but you need to specify what that effect? State delta is and what that event notification would be.
I mean, based on that, I think it sounds like it's actually part of the state. It's not necessarily the new state. It's not even the side effect, right? Because given the same transactions, you will produce the same notifications. So it is the new state.
Well, you know, if I go to my FSM, my mental model of a state machine, you're going to transition to a new state, but you're going to produce an output event or something which might have more than just the state transition, right?
But the state machine within the smart contract, the interpreter, so it is the direct effect more than the side effect. I think it kind of gets back to the interfaces. So when is the side effect interface applied? Every time the new state is applied, and then, because then it feels like it's the same interface.
So the way I was thinking about it is that, you know, what the side effect is gets specified here, and the side effect, whether that happens right away or happens when, you know, later would be dependent on the implementation and on the consensus layer, is the way I was thinking about it. But love to hear what everybody's thoughts are.
So just to clarify sort of the purpose of the conversation we're at right now, Ram, are you proposing that we use this section as a way of hammering out a pre-proposal for an interface, or is there just some intent for making sure that this section is consistent with that objective?
Yeah, just that we have enough of a fleshed out description so that we can convey the information elements and the framework for that. We don't need to actually specify that interface in detail.
I'm on the phone.
Okay, so. Because the discussion between you and Stan is at a level of detail right now that I would expect if we were trying to hammer out the interface rather than trying to figure out what we want in this section.
Good point.
So I would ask both of you, you know, what are the really critical elements that need to go in this section so that we can have this discussion later?
That's a very good point. So
would it be helpful for me to offer my outside perspective
Hell yes.
Quickly, okay, I'll be brief. So, I mean, as I've been listening to you all talk, it really does seem like you are describing a version of this image, which I just copied from above and pasted down here below, that is a little bit more elaborated. For example, we might take the arrow that goes from the contract interpreter box in the middle out to side effects and make it a dashed line to indicate that that's something that is, you know, not always present, but, you know, is often present, right? And maybe a little bit more richness, but it feels like, you know, I've heard this exact conceptual model that's represented in this image described a few times, right, by different people on this call. And so my suggestion is that we consider how we might flesh this image out a little bit, which I think is perfectly appropriate and often can really help a reader, because you're tying back to something that you introduced early and saying, so if we refer back to that image that we presented up front, we can further, you know, elaborate in the following couple of areas, right? And then lead from there straight into where we get into more of the nitty gritty, which is in the following section, where we flesh out, you know, the specific ways that the different frameworks within Hyperledger go about this process. I feel like an image like this would give the reader kind of enough to hang their hat on, so that as they go through these different frameworks, they'll have a model that they can refer back to, right? That's my sense. But again, I recognize that I'm coming at this really very much from sort of an outside perspective.
Having listened to all of us, you should see that you're really along with all of us in the sense that there seems to be enough, you know, sort of difference in viewpoint on this interface question also.
And I guess it's also a reflection of how much time has passed since we last discussed this. At least it felt like we had a certain degree of convergence the last time we discussed this, but we don't know what the quorum was at that time.
So, I mean, would people be amenable to the following next step? Like, I can make an effort to just convert these bullet points into two short paragraphs, you know, input effectively and output, right? Not using that word, but, you know, that's sort of the two sections. And can I get a volunteer to spend 15 minutes with me virtually whiteboarding what a, you know, an evolution of this image might look like, that would provide that bridge between the conceptual section, the sort of reference architecture section, and the following details of how each of the frameworks approach smart contracts? Because I think a quick call so that I understand visually what needs to change in this image will give me what I need to then, you know, work with the designer to, you know, kind of along with the other things that need to be beautified, just kind of polish this a little bit. How do
Greg, are you planning on being in Los Angeles next week?
I was not planning on it, but I've been thinking about it, and I might end up going. That may end up being a really good opportunity for us to hammer this out, huh?
Yeah, I face to face with a whiteboard so we can scratch has been very effective for us to date.
Let me see what I can do.
Yeah, to second that, it's how we generally get most of this stuff done. So,
okay,
I'll be hunting people in this group for the crypto library too next week.
So I'm there all day Wednesday, I believe. So let's see whether we can perhaps have some time to work on the identity and policy sections right after the identity call. That's 9 to 10 a.m., I think. 9 to 10 a.m. is the identity call. And then maybe 10 to 11 we can meet. And Nathan, are you going to be there?
Yes, I'll be there. And I'm planning on spending as much time as I can on the shared crypto library. And this also sounds like a great discussion.
Yeah. What we've been pending on for a while, I don't know if Ben was going to make it out or not. It didn't sound like he was. But we should all just figure out. I don't know whether we can do some homework ahead of time, but the kind of five functions we laid out for identity and policy are still kind of lingering. So if we can make some significant progress, next week, that would be the next paper, I think, because this one's almost done, I feel. So if we can close out this one.
Do you want to discuss that during the identity working group or not? Because I'm not going to be in LA, but I'll certainly host the call for the identity working group.
Okay. So, you tell me, I'd be happy if we need to cover that and finish it off. But if you had other things that
we're going to talk about the division of the paper into bits, into sections that can be managed easily according to Hart one afternoon type division. So I'll already publish all of that, and hope to get some feedback on it before. But if possible, if you're holding a discussion on the identity policy, it might be useful to have, I would like to hear what you guys are saying.
I'll try to figure out whether
like a Zoom or whatever, the meeting situation is.
Sure. Let's figure out if there is a way to kind of conference in from whatever facilities are there. I don't know. Does anyone know what the arrangement is and whether we'll have the ability to phone in? Many of the other venues supported that, but some did not. So, and it's unfortunately, Vipin, it's kind of not that easy to follow along. So, but it is what it is.
I mean, the worst case, Ram, is that I'll bring one of the a camera that we can plug in the room and use Zoom or something like that.
Okay. So I'll add a Zoom, assuming that we'll have some way to kind of have remote participation on that session.
Thank you.
We may also have to be flexible with the time because I don't know what the general schedule will be. Have we actually successfully done a remote call-in for any of these meetings recently?
Not recently, but we did do it for some of the, I'm thinking the face-to-face about a year ago, we did it.
It's been a while.
We did have a remote call. Yep.
So if we want to do
we did not, they did not have any facilities.
If we want to do this, let's just get on the Hackfest schedule. Because, the schedule is usually very fungible and people go to just what they think the most interesting thing is. So if someone is giving like a really cool talk at 9 a.m. on Wednesday, that's the first real day, right? So we'll probably have to change change times for sure. Because I'm sure Brian will want to give a talk then.
That's okay. I mean, I'll hold the identity working group call anyway. And, you know, you guys don't have to participate. And then whenever you have this other thing, if you can include us with we're not there, that'd be great. Otherwise, we'll see what the results are. That's it. You know, not going to sweat it.
Yeah, so I did put in a placeholder on the proposed thing, but you're right. So if it's the morning of the kickoff, it depends on what else is happening on the session there. But in the last identity call, Vipin was saying he's going to have the regular identity call. So if that conflicts, then some of us will have to.
Yeah, I mean, you know, maybe I'll truncate the session, whatever, you know, some way of dealing with the fact that it's happening during a face-to-face.
Are people flexible with time? How many people do we have from Europe here?
In identity call, there's more.
That's true. Because, I mean, obviously, if we just move it back a little bit, it'll be, you know, probably much easier. If we move it to Thursday, just at the very beginning of all the hackfests, Brian likes to do the thing where, you know, everybody goes around the room and says who they are and says what they're interested in. So, yeah, I don't know. It might be best to move the meeting. That's all.
You're talking about the policy and the identity architecture working group meeting, right?
Yeah, the one that would be held on 9 a.m. next Wednesday.
No, 9 a.m.
Is the identity working group call. It's nothing to do with, not nothing to do with, but, you know.
A separate meeting.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I thought we were talking about the call.
So there's two things, right? There's a regular 9 a.m. Wednesday meeting, the same one that alternates with today. That's a standing meeting that Vipin is planning to have. And, you know, he has to decide whether he wants to make any changes given it coincides with the thing. And I'm flexible about what time Wednesday we want to have the other meeting. Vipin's suggestion was to have it right after so we can... we can kind of overlap, but, you know, depending on what else is happening, we can have it later.
Okay, yeah, sorry. That sounds good.
Yeah, I guess I'll have to also rethink about this identity working group because many of the active members in that are people like you, Ram, Mick, Stan, Hart, all are going to be at the Hackfest. And 9 o'clock is probably not a good time. Anyway, I'll try to initiate a discussion on the identity working group mailing list as well as the TSC mailing list, and let's see where it takes us.
Sounds good. And we are over time, unfortunately, but
and I have to run.
Does it sound good? Is there any other topic you want to kind of bring up for the? For the ARC work group sessions. Mick, did you want to have a session on the privacy and confidentiality thing as well? You want to put that on the agenda?
It would be a good thing to actually start fleshing out some of the details on the security model that we talked about in the last meeting.
Yeah. So do you want to put that on the agenda and try to find a slot?
Yep.
Hopefully Wednesday?
Yep.
What else do we want to kind of cover up, and is there any prep work we want to do before the meeting, or as usual we come up there and we figure it out?
Any I'm other happy topics? With come up there and figure it out, but
okay.
we never lack for things to do.
Absolutely. All right, sounds good, guys.
Nathan, you know, for the identity policy sections, is there any prep work we should do, or do you have any suggestions for what we can make, how we can make our, you know, working session at the face-to-face more productive?
I think the two things would be to do some background reading on the DID specification if you haven't caught up on what's going on there yet. And then the second thing is kind of maybe a general primer on attribute-based credentials and how they work. Both of those two things might help, though I know that a lot of you have already kind of been through the basics on those. So I'm not sure how much actually new work would have to be done to be able to hit the ground running there.
Okay, maybe...
Yeah, I was going to say, if you have reading materials in mind, would you mind like posting those?
Okay, that's actually one of the motivations for the GitHub repository approach in India is some of the documentation we have on this is either way too deep, it's at the crypto level, or way too high level, it's more of kind of a getting started guide kind of approach. So I'll poke around and see what I have and send it. I guess the architecture mailing list would be the right place for it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the crypto level stuff is probably fine for this group.
Okay.
All right, guys, look forward to meeting many of you next week. And we're almost there with the smart contract paper, and let's try to get the identity policy sections going in earnest as well. Sounds good. Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.
Awesome. Thanks. See everybody next week.
Thanks.
Thanks.